Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Come on, 10-year-old Matt called to his friend Derek. Get your mitt, let's go. Wait a sec. Derek stood at the open kitchen door. I don't think we should go just yet. What's up? Matt came over and looked through the screen. See that sky? Derek pointed over the treetops. Yeah, Matt rejoined. So? Can't you see that some clouds are darker? Well, they just look different. Sorta, Matt squinted, looking up. So what? So, those dark ones are called thunderheads, and they're getting bigger. Then what? Matt was focused on the dark, rolling cloud forms. They don't call them thunderheads for nothing, dude. That means we're probably going to have some big-time thunderstorms. Oh, Matt muttered as the first big splash hit the screen. From a parent's perspective, what can our children learn from studying weather? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a meteorologist who frequently works with kids. Ron S. Gerd is a meteorologist with the National Weather Service of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. He works on a daily basis with National Weather Service partners such as the American Red Cross, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, the Weather Channel, the American Meteorological Society, and the National Weather Association. In the Fairfax, Virginia community, Mr. Gerd volunteers to make numerous school presentations and volunteers as a science fair judge for Fairfax County Schools. He and his wife have two grown children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Ron.
Thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity to talk about severe weather. I can't wait to get started.
Well, why should children learn about weather?
Well, weather impacts your daily lives. One of the first things you do in the morning when you get out of bed is you want to know two things. What's to eat and what do I wear before I go out for the daily activities? Particularly in springtime in the fall when the weather can be like a roller coaster. One morning it's maybe 30 degrees and the next morning it may be 50 degrees. So you have to know that. You have to be prepared what kind of clothing to wear and then throughout the day maybe what kind of activities am I going to do? Am I going to cut the grass today or should I wait till tomorrow till it's a bright sunny day? So weather impacts our daily lives, almost everything that we do. And the second part of it is this country has more severe weather than any other country on the globe. And so the chances that you will encounter severe weather are very high because there are tornadoes in the springtime, hurricanes in late summer, early fall, winter storms, floods almost round the clock. There's always going to be some sort of severe weather occurring across the country. So you should be prepared for that.
What about children learning about dangerous weather? You know, on the news for months have been things like tsunamis and hurricanes and major blizzards and so forth. What about teaching children about all that stuff?
We have found that children, even from the earliest ages, are really fascinated about weather if it's presented in an entertaining, lighthearted approach, if we don't get too deep. We have a publication called the Owlie Skywarn Weather Activities Book, where young children, elementary school level, can learn about the basic concepts of severe weather, whether it's hurricanes or tornadoes, and what you have to do to protect yourself, whether you're at home with your parents, or whether you're at school, or with your friends in a playground. We add safety features, like, for example, if there was a thunderstorm approaching. We don't want you going near tall trees. We don't want you to be near water. We want you to be inside a building safe from the lightning strikes. So we do it in two parts, a little bit of science and a little bit of weather safety to protect yourselves during a severe weather event.
Does it follow that when children, elementary age to younger children, sort of know all these steps, they also are calmer about things?
We have found that working with the Red Cross, that there are a lot of studies that when people hear consistent messages like from both the Weather Service and the TV broadcasters, the people will react to those messages because they're consistently saying the same thing. And yes, when they know what to do, it's a lot easier for them to follow the proper procedures rather than guess and don't know what to do. So education, even at the earliest ages, we find that students are willing to learn about the weather around them.
When kids know more about what a thunderstorm is, They were calmer.
They become less afraid. I mean, because, you know, a thunderstorm can be, it's noisy, a loud clap of thunder. You get a brilliant flash of lightning, and it can be dangerous. But if you know what to do under those circumstances, then I think overall everybody feels a little calmer because they're somewhat in control and they're minimizing their risks. You can't always guarantee that you won't be, you know, harmed, but you can certainly reduce the risks. And that's comforting for both parents and children.
How can we teach our youngest children about what they see in the sky?
Well, I think the first thing you do is you take a cloudy day, and one of the things you ask is, well, what is that cloud? It's a water vapor. And what that immediately leads you to is the hydrologic cycle or the water cycle. And that water exists in three stages. It's the only element on the earth that exists in three stages. It exists as a liquid, as a solid, and as a gas. And so that cloud water vapor, and they're all interdependent. So what was today's cloud could have been yesterday's drop of water in the Atlantic Ocean. And so where did that cloud come from? And where is it going? And what's it going to do? It's all part of water. And as you know, water is our most precious commodity on the earth. Without having water, we're not going to survive as a population. So the clouds represent the water cycle, which in turn sparks the curiosity about how do I prepare for water? How do I make sure I have clean water sources? I have adequate supply of water? It's an important, vital part of our life.
What kinds of weather-related experiences are especially appealing for children?
Well, we have found that hands-on activities, we don't get students excited if we just lecture to them. For example, there's a commercial company that has built called a hurricane simulator. It's like an old-fashioned telephone booth. And you walk in there, you close the door, and the big fan is above on the ceiling. And it simulates the wind strength of a very weak Category 1 hurricane. And so when we bring that to our exhibits, people just line up to want to experience the firsthand power of a hurricane. They also put some of these hurricane simulators in shopping malls as an entertainment device so that, you know, if mom wants to go shopping and dad and the kids are bored, well, maybe we'll take a walk over to the hurricane simulator. And we see some of that in amusement parks, too, that there are activities that sort of simulate the weather in terms of it. And they're always trying to sort of replicate under controlled conditions the force of Mother Nature, a hurricane simulator, maybe a flood simulator or a tsunami simulator or an earthquake where you shake the ground. People then walk away with a better appreciation for the earth sciences. But we do it in an entertaining but also educational way.
What about the kinds of little science projects the kids do to make a cloud, for
example?
Well,
there's a couple things. We have a very popular device called Tornado in a Bottle, where you can take two soda bottles and a little plastic adapter, fill it up with colored water and maybe some sparklers, and then you flip it over on the opposite side. As the water drains into the lower empty bottle, tornado forms on top. Or a water spout, and the kids love that. You know, they just think they can make their own little tornado. And you can also just daily look up at the sky and imagine those clouds and maybe see certain figures with those clouds. Maybe you see a horse from a cloudy day. And then, of course, one of the more spectacular sky events is the rainbow. Whenever you see a rainbow, mostly during the early evenings, that always, I think, gets people's attention.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about learning weather.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with meteorologist Ron Gerd about children learning about the weather. What weather-related experiments might older children enjoy? I know sometimes older kids are a harder sell.
Well, I think getting with the hands-on approach, they could certainly build weather instruments in terms of if they would like to monitor and observe the weather in their own backyard. We have instructions of how to build weather instruments, or if you like to buy them, you can buy them and set up your own little portable weather station in your backyard. We actually have training programs where we will train young adults as well as students on how to observe climate data as well as severe weather data. So we can get them involved in building weather instruments. You can also encourage them to use weather as perhaps in the science fair. You know, for example, I've seen students look at the impacts of weather on sports in terms of golf and tennis. The moisture in the atmosphere may result in the ball coming off the racket in a different way if the air is very moist versus if the air is very dry. So you can pique the students' interest either directly, and then a lot of schools will have science clubs where you can join a science club, and then that way you get an interest into weather as well.
I wonder whether this carries over into health kinds of stuff. I was thinking as a mother and a grandmother about humidity and heat and all that kind of stuff.
Well, heat is perhaps one of our biggest concerns, obviously, during the summertime. Unfortunately, we have too many reported cases where people have left both their pets or their young children in the backseat of a car and gone shopping or forgotten. And we have a very strong campaign to make people aware of the dangers of heat, you know, as in your daily lives. And sometimes that's an important factor where we have public outreach campaigns, particularly when we like to team up with the TV broadcasters who also have that same community responsibility to make sure that parents are aware that heat can be very difficult. UV index, you want to be sure your children, when they go out to the pool or sports, are protected with sunscreen because the UVs are something that are, you know, long-term medical impacts. And then most importantly, in the summertime, you want to be sure that the kids stay hydrated with water if they're playing sports. I know our soccer coach always told his girls, soccer players, bring plenty of water to the soccer game because it's going to be hot, it's going to be humid, and your body needs that refreshing, getting back to the water cycle again. Water is very important in your daily lives.
From the point of view of a scientist, what kinds of skills do children acquire when they're studying meteorological events?
Well, I think beyond the math and science, the third most important skill is communications. How do I present what I've learned about a weather forecast to the public or to my business clients that I have to convince them that I know this hurricane is coming, I'm totally confident, and a lot of times your body language will reflect your confidence level in your forecast. So communicating your information is very important, whether it's communicating to other scientists, whether it's communicating to the public. So I think that's very important. One of the things you also have to learn is how to accept failure in weather forecasting. We don't have a 100% perfect track record in forecasting. I think everybody knows that. So you have to regroup. I mean, there may be days when you think, man, my forecast is right on, it can't possibly miss the camp. And you wake up the next day and you just say, well, what happened here? I mean, so it teaches you humility and it teaches you to accept failure as part of your, and I think those are valuable life skills beyond meteorology and forecasting. Everybody has to learn to deal with failure, not a perfect world. And so, but communication skills are number one, and your ability to communicate and collaborate with others. A lot of times, like particularly in the hurricane forecasting, it takes a team of meteorologists to issue the forecast. It doesn't happen necessarily by one individual. So you have to learn to collaborate, and you have to learn to accept other people's opinions. Like maybe they know something that I forgot or didn't take into account for. So you have to learn to work like a team, like in sports. You all have a mission.
One of my favorite weather stories has to do with communications. When my oldest child was fairly young, he had a friend spend the night. And then it turned out that the next morning there was a huge blizzard. Everything was closed for days. It was just unbelievable. And that would have been okay in itself, except for the friend's father owned a meteorology company. So, and he was quite surprised.
We do have surprises once in a while. And particularly, winter storms are very difficult to forecast because we've made remarkable progress in forecasting high temperatures, low temperatures, winds, cloud cover. But precipitation is one of the more challenging aspects of the field of forecasting. Precipitation can be very spotty. One neighborhood gets doused with a downburst. The next neighborhood may be almost bone dry from the same storm. So it has a high variability both in time and space. So precipitation still remains our number one challenge in forecasting. I can understand that, particularly for winter storms, and there's so many impacts on winter storms, whether you're near the coast or in a mountain range, it's all have an impact on what the forecast will be. If you're near the coast, the tendency tends to be towards rain. But if you're up near higher elevations, like a mountain chain, then that's colder temperatures, and you may be experiencing snow where your neighbors to the east and along the coastline are experiencing rain. It's a very challenging profession.
We know of some meteorologists who went into the profession because they were really interested in snow days.
That's what kids are also interested in, too, is snow days.
Right.
The pressure is on for us. When we call out school, then we're the children's heroes.
That's right. Well, speaking of schools, how can teens become actively involved in weather science activities?
Well, there's a couple things that teens can do. As I mentioned previously, a lot of these high schools have science clubs, which are very well-grounded, very comprehensive, and I've done several speaking engagements to science clubs to sort of promote the math and science and meteorology and oceanography to students. You can also become a volunteer at a local forecast office. Now, that's not to say that every office has an opening, but we have cases where students have come into the weather service as a junior or a senior in high school saying, I want to get started as a meteorologist. I want to go to school, you know, to get my degree in meteorology, and we'll find some opportunities. They're limited, but there are some opportunities where they could spend the summer with us. Some of these positions are paid, some are not paid. It all depends on the local. And you can work side by side with our meteorologists, helping them with some of their studies or some of their daily work. And we actually have some students who have started in the weather service as a junior in high school, went to college, and then are in the workforce, and we've reconnected with them. And so there are opportunities like that. We also have, on occasions, the local forecast office will have an open house. And they'll invite the public on a weekend to come in and see what we do, you know, see all the technology, see how we make a forecast. So it's a good opportunity to go see if you're interested. Go to their websites, go to our websites, and there'll generally be an announcement that says we're going to have an open house in the springtime, Saturday and Sunday. Public, come on in and see what's going on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about learning about weather.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with meteorologist Ron Gerd about children learning weather.
Is this in cities across the country or only selected cities?
Well, we have 122 forecast offices across the country, and we have 13 river forecast centers. And they're the local arms and legs and local voice of the weather service. So each one of them can hold an open house. But it's up to them to decide. Typically, they're done either in the springtime or in the fall time when the weather is a little bit quieter. But they have to be careful about their scheduling because, you know, if there's severe weather or if there's going to be a bad weather day, then maybe the open house has to be rescheduled because their first priority is to issuing forecasts and warnings to the public. So there's opportunities like that. And then finally, you could also join the local chapter of the American Meteorological Society. The local chapter has no educational requirements. In other words, if you had an interest in meteorology, you could join the local chapter, attend monthly meetings where they go to different locations every month, and get involved that way as well.
So you could do what I'm thinking of is students who live in places where maybe there's not such an opportunity because they're not near
right.
the city that would have it.
Right.
There are other ways to do it.
And yeah, one way is to, of course, get onto the Internet, and there are networks. For example, there's a commercial website weather company that has installed 8,000 weather observing stations in schools across the country, and they're all linked. So you maybe your school is part of that weather observing network, and you could then sort of communicate to other students, maybe in a different part of the country, and set up sort of a email type system. And generally, it's the students find the creative ways. If they're really interested in weather and really want to explore, they'll sometimes find their own solutions. But we'll point them in the right direction.
What they really like to find is a solution to change the weather.
We all would like to see that. Then I wouldn't be working if I had that solution. I'd be on a retirement home in the Caribbean or the Pacific someplace.
What's the most surprising benefit you've seen from kids learning about weather?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I think they're great problem solvers. Students, we tend to underestimate their capacity and their ability to understand complex issues. I see it in science fairs and science exhibits all the time, where they have taken a subject and what they thought would be a very simple science experiment has turned into a lot more detailed. And so once they get that sort of bug that they've discovered something or they found something very fascinating that they didn't realize, because science exhibits are about having a hypothesis, either proving it or not proving it, but sometimes that leads you into different areas where you were unexpectedly going. And they're also very curious. And also, I think my impression is everybody, including students, feel very responsible for their environment, including which is a very part of the weather. All we have to do is see examples on the news about climate change and global warming and the polar bears as an example. And people resonate with trying to be responsible for their environment and the animals that inhabit their environment. And, of course, weather plays a big part on animals' behavior patterns. If it's warmer than normal or less precipitation available, that has impacts on the animals. And so I think people see that connection between weather and animals. They find that quite fascinating as well. I think they generally feel at some point they get this level of environmental responsibility within their own, within their own mindset. And so that's what we try to do, is show them the bigger picture, that weather is just a small part of your environment, but the impacts, it's sort of cascades all around you, or sort of spreads out, sort of like a multiplier, that whether it gets into health, whether it gets into animal behavior, whether it gets into the commercial industries, weather has an impact almost across the entire spectrum of human activities. You just have to make the students aware of that connection. Sometimes they're just not aware of the connection.
My oldest son was the one who used to come thundering down the steps multiple times a night if there was the slightest chance there might be a snow forecast, down the steps and out the front door checking the sky. And his favorite gift growing up, and even in adulthood he's had more advanced versions, was when we gave him a barometer. And it had other various dials and gauges on it. He thought that was the most fabulous.
Well, I have a story to share with you likewise. When we were growing up, our kids would always be challenged with, what should we get Dad for his birthday or Christmas or Father's Day? Well, let me tell you, I have more NOAA weather radios in my desk back in my home. I have every conceivable model, make of a NOAA, because when in doubt, get Dad a NOAA weather radio or get him a weather book. He'll love a weather book. I understand that. But there's a lot of activities that you can go to, a lot of these commercial stores or online, and have access, or even teacher catalogs for materials in the classroom, have like a tornado lamp or weather instruments. Weather is starting to permeate across all parts of the economy.
Is there anything special that you would want parents or children to know about weather-related issues?
Okay, for parents, when driving, you see flooded roadways where a stream has gone over its bank. We have a very well-designed safety message. Turn around, don't drown. Don't go through that water with your vehicle, because you don't know what's underneath that water. That's the message for parents. Children, when you're out playing during the summertime and you hear thunder or you see lightning, we have an expression for them. Don't be a fool, get out of the pool. So we want you out of the pool and home if thunder or lightning is present in the area.
What about the business about not being under a tree? That seems to be such a basic thing. You find shelter under a large object, and it's very often a
tree.
But
the large objects are also the lightning rod for the lightning. Lightning will always seek the highest position, the highest location in that immediate area. So trees are definitely not a place, especially the tallest tree in your local area. You don't want to do that.
Get into the nearest building.
Get into the nearest secure building, and a backup would be a car with a metal roof, not a convertible, but a metallic, fully enclosed car.
Because it has rubber tires?
Because the electricity, when the lightning hits it, acts as a shell, and it sort of, the lightning goes through the metal and then into the ground through the rubber tires.
Okay. I remember that someone told me when I was a child that rubber does not conduct electricity.
Right.
So it's good to be near rubber.
In a car.
So when we were little, my brother and I used to run around the house during thunderstorms holding on to erasers. Sorry.
Well, that's taking
real
it one. That's taking it one step that I wasn't prepared for. I'll be honest with you. That shows some that shows some creative thinking.
Which is why I didn't become a scientist. What resources would you recommend for those who would like to pursue this subject further?
Well, there's a couple of places. First of all, it sounds obvious, but visit your local science museums. They're bound to have some sort of weather exhibit. Certainly, you could go to the American Meteorological Society's webpage, ametsoc.org. They have a great section on careers in meteorology. The other one that I like online is National Geographic has a great website called Forces of Nature, where you can actually build your own tornado or hurricane by changing the parameters. So you actually build based on sea surface temperatures and moisture in the atmosphere and winds. And then, of course, I would encourage you to visit, a local forecast office under the right circumstances, keeping in mind that their first mission is the local forecast.
Ron Gerd, thank you so very much for being with us and helping to demystify some of the ways we can learn about weather.
Well, thank you for this opportunity. You've been a marvelous group to talk to.
Our gift for our first caller is a copy of the National Weather Service's family book, Watch Out, Storms Ahead, Ali Skywarn's weather book. You can get it by calling us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573. Please spell anything that's not obvious and mention show number 475. Tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice, or check us out at facebook.com/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Bird and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the SF Foundation. Our sound engineer is Mark Vitelli. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.